Hello and welcome to Bricks and Banner, the show with real talk from the custom Lego community. I'm your host as always, Billy, and we are back. It's a new year, new me, same old podcast. It's good to be back, and I don't think there's a better guest we could have gotten to kick off the year. But before we get into that, just a quick reminder that if you're listening to the pod and you don't know something that we're referencing, you can head on over to our Instagram page. It's bricks_and_banter. On there, you'll find a post about this episode with some images relating to the discussion. So if you're feeling a little lost in the discussion or want to visualize something, it's probably in that post. While you're there on the Instagram page, I would really appreciate it if you repost it onto your story. It helps spread the word, and it's the best way to support the podcast. Now, with all that said, on this episode, I got the pleasure of talking with Joe, the head of Citizen Brick. If you are unfamiliar with Citizen Brick, they are a leading provider of custom pad-printed minifigures and accessories. They have been in business over 10 years now and have been a major component in the custom community's growth over this time. We discussed the early years starting Citizen Brick, the stylistic limitations of pad printing, his thoughts on the resale market for his products, and so much more. So with no further ado, enjoy my conversation with Joe from Citizen Brick. And we're here with Joe from Citizen Brick. How are you doing?
Hey, Billy, how's it going?
Good to have you. We've already been bantering it up. But long awaited guest. I don't know why I'd never reached out to you, but I find that some of the people I've known the best are the ones that have gotten sort of shafted and moved to the back. It's just like, I know I could get them and I can't wait to do it. And it just, they keep getting
pushed aside. We always hurt the ones we love, right?
right.
Well, I got to tell you, if you'd waited any longer, I'd be like, well, what's the matter, man? It's like, it's starting to feel like
I'm not cool enough. Like,
well, maybe he's waiting for Sweeps Week. I don't know, but maybe. Well, anyway, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you. I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Yes. Thank you for the time. And so I guess we'll just jump right into it because we've already been running for 6 minutes. Not that they'll know. I feel like a lot of your AFOL side and the stuff prior to what caused you to create Citizen Brick is still a bit of a mystery. So I'd love for you to take us back.
The origin story.
How it all got started.
Well, I was thinking about that in relation to some of the other interviews I've heard you do and how maybe the Citizen Brick entry into the community is going to be a little less satisfying. Like, it's not as organic as of like, oh, you know, I never stopped playing with Lego and I never, you know, it was a natural progression for me. It was a little more of a side door for me. I came out of a fine art education is the best way to put it. I went to art school and been doing a lot of different creative stuff, not necessarily Lego stuff, not necessarily even toy stuff. I guess the through line would be that I've been illustrating stuff since I was a little kid, but really the kind of the point when I actually crossed into Lego was I was teaching at several local colleges in Chicago and teaching printmaking and fine art and drawing classes and all this stuff. And I was kind of, that's what I was doing for a living. And I had a son who was 2 and another one who was on the way. And I was kind of like preparing, I was building out a room for the coming baby. And as I was going through stuff, I had found a box of my Lego collection from when I was a kid that my mom had sent along saying, oh, maybe your kids can play with these one day. So I had, you know, spent some time looking at a box of Lego that I hadn't really thought about since like 1988 or something when I was like 12 or 13. So even when I was a kid, the printed parts were always my favorite. I was kind of, you know, I don't know if you, this is way before your time, I think, but like the 2x2 slope pieces or the 1x2 slope pieces that were a little rotary telephone.
Yeah, sure.
Billy, do you even know what a rotary telephone is?
Hardly.
Hardly. You've never used one, I'm sure. But anyway, I was fascinated with like the printed parts. And being a printmaker, of a printmaker background, it just kind of dawned on me. I was like, I wonder if I could figure out how Lego prints on stuff. And I had no idea how to do it. I hadn't done any research. I wasn't in the community or even really thinking about Lego in any real way at this point. This is like,
it was like 2000, a purely like an artistic pursuit kind of deal.
Yeah. I mean, I always like, I liked Lego more than anything else when I was a kid, but I really hadn't given it much thought since I was like a teenager.
Yeah.
But I hear that, you know, I had this collection in front of me and it had all my parts. I think the last set that I had bought was maybe someone had given me one of the very first Star Wars sets. So there was some of that stuff in there, but nice. It was pretty untouched. And thought about printing on Lego just because, you know, it was like an unanswered question from when I was 12 years old, when I was trying to like draw on blank parts with a Sharpie marker, you know, just mm-hmm. trying to make something that Lego didn't have.
Everyone's done it.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's the through line for every customizer or anyone who's interested in third party. It's so funny.
Yeah. Well, it's also kind of like my kind of art practice is really based on a lot of process stuff. Like I'm really interested in printing processes. And when I ran into Lego, it was a process that I realized that I didn't know how to do it. I couldn't, mm-hmm. I wasn't familiar with it. Pad printing was like totally off the radar for me. And it was kind of exciting that there was a methodology that I was like, hey, I've got a master's degree in printing. How do I not know what this is, right? So I started doing a lot of research and found some videos online and little snippets of video from inside the Lego factory. And I was looking at what I now recognize as being like a pad printing setup. But at the time, I didn't know what it was, but it was printing like Stormtrooper helmets. I'm sure that video is still on YouTube. But it just really kind of sparked this interest in like trying to figure it out. Like I want to know how they're doing it, what kind of ink are they using. And I spent about a year in my third bedroom, my condo, you know, away from my young kids, trying to figure out how to print on Lego parts. It was nothing more, you know, I didn't imagine it as a business. I didn't imagine it as being like part of a larger hobby for me. I just wanted to see if I could do it. And it took me about a year till I got, you know, through some of the intricacies of pad printing, which was totally foreign to me. You know, I tried using block printing ink. I tried using etching ink. I tried using paint. I tried using all these things. And then I finally pulled the trigger on a pad printing machine. I should have asked you this before you started recording. Can I swear on this or?
You're welcome.
Okay. Okay. I'll try to keep it to a minimum, but it's pertinent. I was, you know, so here I am. I had living in Chicago. I'm teaching night classes at colleges and I'm kicking around this idea of how do I print on Lego? And I found a pad printing machine that was on eBay and it's a monster. I mean, it's monstrous in its primitiveness. It's not a fancy thing. It's this little like hand crank machine. And they were selling them on eBay for like $400. And I was like pacing the floor. I had, you know, diapers to buy and baby food to buy. And, you know, I don't know if anybody told you, but teaching wasn't, you know, making me
super
rich.
Lucrative.
Yeah. So $400 might as well have been a million. And I was, you know, describing it to my mom who'd come up to visit the new grandkid. And I was like, yeah, mom, I'm thinking about doing this. I know it's totally ridiculous, but I'm thinking about buying this little, she's like, it's $400. Just like shit or get off the pot. You know, my mom is very blunt like that.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to buy this machine off of eBay. And that's when I started like spending a year with it, trying to figure it out. And the first print that I ever got off of it was, I think it was the neutral head that we do now.
Wow.
That was the first design that I made. And I ran around the house and I showed my wife. I was like, look what I made. And she didn't recognize it as not a Lego
design.
Yeah. Cause she's not Lego sympathetic. And she's like, what is this? I'm like, it's a Lego. She's like, yeah, I know that. But I was like, no, but I made it. She's like, you didn't make it. I'm like, no, I printed on it. It was like this, me desperately trying to explain to her.
That's kind of funny. It's almost like the Lego Turing test. Like, can you recognize it as not Lego?
Well, that's when I knew we was on to something, right? If I could trick a civilian into not knowing. So that was it. And then I really didn't have a plan. Like, what am I going to do with this? Like, I figured out how to print it, and the technical challenge was really the, you know, what I was after. I hadn't really thought about like starting a business out of it, anything like that.
I still can't believe that the neutral is really the first one. It really shows the significance for your logo and everything like that.
And it's kind of stuck with me as being like my favorite design, because it kind of sums up a lot of my inner feelings about everything pretty well. I was just saying to the guy who works with us that I was looking at a tray on the drying rack of couple thousand neutral heads that we just printed the other day, and I'm looking at them all and they're all looking up at me, and I just said, like, just think about all the effort and machinery and technology and time and chemistry and dinosaurs rendered down into oil that get made into poly, you know, ABS plastic, and like all these things have brought us to this moment where I print this dumb, emotionless, neutral face staring up at me. And I was like, this is I just said to
just
him
to make a Lego head that is visibly apathetic.
Like, I think I looked at him, and he has to be polite to me because I'm the boss, and I just said, like, unironically, I think I looked at him and said, like, we're changing lives, man. So it's nice that after all these years I'm still pretty goosed by by the stupidness of what we do.
That's really great.
So I don't know, did that answer the kind of Batman origin story you were looking for?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, so at what point did you sort of realize, like, this is going to be more than a hobby of me, like, conquering the challenge of how does Lego print onto this?
Well, you know, being kind of an art guy, the absurdity of a lot of things that I was doing, you know, doesn't, I'm not really fazed by that. Like, if I'm, you know, it wasn't weird to me that I'd be like, had spent all this kind of time and effort trying to figure this out to no end. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, as an artist, I was kind of used to like spending lots of money and not making a lot of money. But when I started looking into it, I found that Brick World Chicago was very close by geographically and very soon. Like, it was like coming up in the, you know, a couple months from then. And it just kind of very organically is like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll build a website and I guess I'll just get a booth there. And if you ever try to, you know, the wait list for booths at a big event like that is now like,
yeah,
miles long. But at the time, I just got lucky. I kind of walked right in and I was like, oh, I guess I'll just roll the dice and get a booth at this Lego show and see what this is all about. And that's when I really got kind of an introduction to how big the community was. Mm. And if it had been like in Des Moines, Iowa, or somewhere else that I would have had to really travel to go, I'd probably been like, meh, it's too big of a gamble. But it was really because it was incredibly close and very soon and very easy that I kind of just found myself at my first Lego convention. And that's when I realized how big of a thing it was. You know, a lot of vendors, well, it's funny, I found some pictures from that show. This is like Brick World 2011. And I found some pictures that someone had just taken, and I was in them. And a lot of the other vendors who are around in the background of the picture are not around anymore as a viable business, I guess. So I kind of like, you know, if you had told me in 10 years ago that I'd still be doing this 10 years now, I wouldn't have believed it. But it must have been, you know, I think I stumbled on something I really liked doing, and there was a good response right out of the gate. I think if people, you know, had been chilly about it, I might have, you know, might have not ignited for me the way that it had. But right out of the gate, people were kind of like, what are these? Are these Lego? You know, the mission statement, I think right away was, I was still thinking about it in terms of like an art project. Like, I just thought it'd be kind of funny to mess with a big, well-known company like Lego. I just thought it would, mm-hmm. You know,
almost like parody of it.
Well, you know, as beloved as they are to you and me and all your listeners, they're not a very edgy company, you know, and that was interesting to me that it was like, that'd be kind of funny to just kind of mess with, you know, the archetype, you know, of the minifigures. I always thought it was funny that they had like policemen and firemen and nurses and doctors and garbage men and whatever. And then I thought it'd be funny to just make kind of edgier versions of that. And still kind of share the same aesthetic, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't anything more sophisticated than that. But then when people saw them and I could say like, yeah, we print these the same way, you know, that Lego does with the same kind of method and the same, that was really what kind of clicked for a lot of AFOLs, I think, is that, you know, as you know, a lot of AFOLs who lean towards purity of their hobby get a little skittish about introducing kind of foreign elements, you know?
Yeah.
So I think we wanted to right away, I was like, if people are going to buy these, you kind of got to be the exception that purists would make, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever phrased it that way out loud, but like, I want to be the exception that purists would make. You know, I don't really like third party stuff. I don't like custom stuff, but Citizen Brick is cool. You know, that was kind of the test.
It has to be something approachable.
It has to be something that kind of passes the sniff test, right? Like they have to look at it and go, oh yeah, yeah, this is seamless. This looks like my other Lego and this, mm-hmm. I don't have any reservations about kind of folding it into my mocks or anything like that. So
totally.
That's been kind of the guiding principle. I think that's why, you've probably heard me say this before. I think pad printing drives a lot of the aesthetic, you know, to our stuff and to Lego stuff. I think there's like, I don't want to call it limitations or parameters, but there's definitely like forces of physics that you have to contend with when you're printing with liquid ink on a flat surface. And I think a lot of those kind of realities are why Lego looks the way it does and why Citizen Brick stuff looks the way it does. You know, this is kind of something, it's just kind of the characteristic of the process that I think other printing processes kind of circumnavigate a little bit. You know, you could call it a flaw, but I'd call it a feature. You know, I like I like working within that kind of narrow gamut of things to do. You know,
yeah, I actually relate to that as well. Just
theoretically,
in terms of how art works.
Yeah, it's the tyranny of choice, right? Like when you can do anything and everything and make 52 different shades of gradient of colors.
Then you're paralyzed.
Then you just, like nothing looks like anything, you know? I like working with like a more limited grammar is what I like to refer to it as. Like, you know, Lego's got a fixed amount of colors. There's only so thin of a line you can realistically print with a pad printing cliche. And I like being able to work within that kind of,
and it forces you to problem solve then.
Correct. Yeah. I like that our press only has 5 colors and I have to figure out how to make, and if you look closely at a lot of Lego parts, it's not economical for them to print 92 colors. That's why you don't see them in the wild. You know, that's the reason that Lego looks the way it does. So a lot of it is process driven, I think.
That's a great point. I think a lot of people, it's just obvious once it's laid out, but not something you're really thinking of much.
Yeah. I mean, it all goes back to that. Like, this is a story I like to tell. I don't think you could ever verify it, but it was very early on, but it's true. I promise. very early on at one of the cons that we went to, we met somebody from somewhere in the Lego design architecture, not anybody high up. I don't think just somebody who was with the Lego organization, who was somewhere in the, this has sounded false as soon as I'm saying it out loud, but someone who swears to me that they were a part of, you know, under the Lego design side, was telling me, he's like, oh yeah, your stuff's all over the office. And this is really early on when that seemed like impossible to me. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, we have a lot of custom stuff and we like to kind of refer to it and see what's going on. That seemed plausible to me. And he told me that he went into a meeting and on the conference table was a bunch of Citizen Brick stuff and that someone else picked it up and goes, when are we releasing these? And they said, well, these aren't ours. These are Citizen Brick products. They're a company in America or something. And I want so badly to believe that that's a true story.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's worthwhile to believe it. Yeah.
That would be a real mic drop for us. I was like, we fooled the Lego.
Fooled
team.
Lego.
You know, yeah. That's
even funnier.
Yeah.
Is just wondering what figures they had and how much they might be worth now. Just that's sitting in a Lego office in a cabinet somewhere. God.
Well, it's funny. I went home for Thanksgiving. My mom was looking through kind of our old Instagram feed and looking at the old Flickr page and goes, "Oh, I have one of those." And it's like, "Yeah, it's in my." It's like, "Can I have it back?"
It's like Action Abe.
Yeah. Can I have that, Mom? It's we didn't make a lot. Some of that early stuff. If you can imagine me sitting in a condo in a empty room with babies crying in the other room and trying to convince myself and my wife that, like, no, this is totally a worthwhile endeavor. And when I was printing the very first kind of batch of stuff, I only made like 25 of each of them. And those 25, like, leather enthusiasts and leisure enthusiasts and all these ones that are like from the very, very beginning, sat around forever because I didn't have a website. I didn't have a place to sell them. Might as well have been a million because I was never going to get rid of them. And a lot of them kind of lingered around for a long time. A lot of that stuff was profoundly unpopular at first. But so it didn't even make any sense to make more than 25 because you're just spinning your wheels at that point. Now I wish I had made more of them and sat on them. But they're out there somewhere.
Funny how it works.
Oh, yeah.
So jumping ahead, at what point did you have to get some employees to help you grow the business? And what sort of constituted that?
Well, that was funny, right? Like I knew, you know, when I listened to some of your other interviews, guys who don't do this full time, there's a little bit of twinge of envy because it's like, oh man, I bet you they just enjoy their hobby as a hobby. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you can make stuff at your own pace and get it to exactly where you want it. And there's no kind of like real world, no deadlines, right? Like, all right. So more than anything else, coming out of art school, what I realized about myself at 45 is that I'm just not good at working for other people. I'm just, I had a lot of careers before these, and I realize now that I just don't ever want to have a real job again. And kind of shook my fist at the heavens and said, like, I'll never go back to wearing a suit and tie again. And even when I was teaching, which is super great, love teaching in college, I'm much better off kind of being my own boss, I realized. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, and thank you to anyone who's listening to this, if you've ever supported Citizen Brick, you are definitely keeping me out of having to get a job again. And that means more to me than anything else. But, you know, I think when I went to that first Lego show in 2011 and I came back, I'm not going to name any numbers, but I came back with more money in my pocket than I was making in a semester of teaching. And
really?
Oh yeah. Which says more, you know, says as much about teaching as it does about, you know, that there was some reception to what we were selling. But I was like, oh man, this is, maybe I could really do this a lot more. Maybe there's a real audience for this. So in kind of quick succession, I realized I had to get out of my condominium because it's just not a really great place to run a pad printing press. And I rented a very outlaw space in Chicago. I think it was a condemned building now. It might just be a pile of rubble now. It was condemned when we rented it. It was like a totally illegal squat building that was on top of an illegal Serbian nightclub that would like fire up from like midnight to 4 a.m. or something. It was always broken.
That's
up
so funny.
Cops.
When I lived in New York, there was a Serbian club right around the corner from us.
Yeah,
so
man.
I really
Those guys
know.
Are serious about their nightlife. And there was a band that crossed the hallway and there was no electricity. And I used to have to run an extension cord down the hallway 100 feet to the men's room and plug in the press into the men's room because it was the only outlet that didn't smell like smoke when I plugged it in.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really pretty
some humble beginnings.
Scrappy, yeah. There's no photographic evidence of this, but so this goes to your question. I'm sorry, I'm drifting away from it.
No worries.
When we got our first employee, and that was Ashley, who was kind of a right-hand gal for like almost a decade.
Yeah.
She was hired right out of college, and she was a student at the college that I was teaching at, and she was like a good, promising art student who was making cool stuff. And, you know, her professor was a buddy of mine, and he just said, yeah, you got to hire her. She's, you know, a hard worker, basically. Mm-hmm. And then the job interview was in this really sketchy, the shop was maybe 10 feet by 20 feet, maybe no 10 by 15, something really like a one car garage kind of shape. And it was so hot that usually I was just sitting in there in my boxer shorts with just a respirator on. It was very kind of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
Yeah. So I was fully dressed for the interview, but like not afterwards. After she left, I was like, all right, back to work. Back in the sweatshop conditions. But I said to her, like, look, this is pretty gritty, but you know, you come highly recommended. And she was good for, she's like, yeah, not scared off by the working conditions. And hiring somebody, I think she was attending bar at the time. So she was used to kind of like weird hours and just down for whatever, and was pretty, not a Lego person, but really excited about making kind of like edgy stuff, I think. And, still, you got to remember at this point, like renting a studio and hiring a person and filling out like W-4 forms and all that stuff seemed crazy to have a business where you're just making custom Lego stuff. It just seemed absurd on its face. But it was just kind of like, yeah, let's try it. You know, it's not going to sink us. I can always go back to teaching or whatever. And then pretty quickly, you know, it was doing really well and getting a little bit of a following, and I was able to stop teaching, which was a big step. That was really kind of like the leap off the edge where, am I really going to say that I do this for a job forever and ever? But yeah, it's been that way for about, I think, the last 7 or 8 years, which is amazing. And not because of any sort of particular business skill that I have. You know, anybody who's ever sent me an email and didn't get a response back knows that like the regular graces of, you know, customer service are not, they don't come naturally to me. You know, I'd rather be drawing stuff than, you know, renewing my business license again.
Yeah. So there was about like 3 years there in the beginning where you were still doing it as a part-time and still teaching.
Yeah. Oh, and I was not just teaching one place. I was teaching like 4 different colleges around, and I had two little kids at home. I was really just running on adrenaline for those first couple of years. Trying to figure out pad printing. I joking about the $400 pad printing press that I used. Very quickly, that kind of turned into an automatic one color machine. And then the biggest decision of my life was like buying the first 4-color press, because it was a ton of money, and I had to, you know, kind of pitch it to my wife. I was like, hey, it's cool if I, like, you know, take our life savings and buy this machine. It weighs like 800 pounds, and it's going to be delivered to the loading dock at this like condemned building that I was living in at the time. And she was cool. You know, I think she's like, whatever makes you happy. And, but that was a big risk. That was a big kind of like, here we go, off the edge.
Yeah, now
real industrial now.
It's not shit or get off the pot anymore. It's like, this is everything. Yeah.
Yeah, this is like, this better work. But, you know, if one thing art school taught me, it's like, it's to be kind of scrappy and entrepreneurial. And I think I was just like confident that I could figure it out on the fly, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny looking back at some of the early material, because I do, and still for the most part, do everything. I do all the designing, all the kind of emails and posters and blah, 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 all the social media stuff lately. You know, well, let me backpedal on that. We have a team of people that I tap to do photographs, to do, but I've always been the one kind of like creative director type, I guess. And in the end, doing every part of the business was like a full-time endeavor, you know? So eventually teaching was like, what am I doing this for? I gotta focus on this fledgling business now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. You kind of touched on, it before, but I was going to ask you if there's something you miss about those olden days when the business was smaller before you have a bunch of employees and big deadlines and stuff like that?
No, it's not. It was really kind of sketchy, you know, like, I was trying to put myself in that same mindset of like, could I do that again? And I don't know, man, that was like a real kind of hustle. I would teach in the morning, then go back to this shop, and then I would teach night class and I'd go back to the shop, and I was working there every weekend, and it was really kind of crazy hours. Like I think if I knew how much kind of energy it was going to take to get it off the launch pad, I don't know that now at this age I would have the strength to do that again. Part of it is just like the idealism of youth, and part of it is just like being too dumb not to know, you know, how risky it was. But
right.
Yeah, no, I don't, you know, I was talking to somebody lately because I'm in my 40s now, and they're like, oh, don't you wish you could be 20 again? And I was like, no, man, like I was broke when I was 20, you know, selling blood. it's like, no, I don't. I like being 40 much more than I like being 20. You know, I'm glad that kind of like real scrappy time is in the rearview mirror.
The time in the past. Yeah.
Yeah. Hope so. Next job I'm going to, if
next job, if I, hold on.
Well, look, man, you got it. Who knew this bumblebee was going to fly, you know? So right. And it's funny because I got a financial advisor who he's like, what are your plans for the next 10 years? I was like, who the hell knows? Like, would you give me a business loan if I went in and said like, yeah, my plan is to make custom Lego. I want to make, now hear me out. I'm going to put nipples on a Lego guy and people are going to go, you know.
And they're going to love it though.
Well, yeah, no, trust me. I think there's an audience for this. Like Citizen Brick is totally self-funded because, you know, and maybe this is to your question too. Like I could have done this a lot faster of a climb to get where we're at now if I had just like borrowed some money. If someone had given me like $100,000 early on, I might have shaved a couple of years off of this. But who the hell is going to give you $100,000 to do something so silly? You know, I don't have rich, you know, rich relatives who could leave it to me. So it was conservative in the sense that like I never borrowed any money, did it, just kind of put my own money back into it again and again and again, and kind of stuck with it. I think it just, you know, I'm a very boring individual in that from sun up to sundown, I'm just working on this, you know, coming up with different ways to make me laugh, I guess. But yeah, it's a full-time occupation now.
I think that's a good motto. I think it makes plenty of other people laugh. There's a lot of similar sensibilities. So if you keep that as a guiding principle a little bit.
Just the conversations we have around the shop that are like dead serious about, you know, I'm yelling at an employee because the nipple color is not right. Like, it's just not right, you know? Like, and now that we have some sort of, you know, kind of like burgeoning molding parts capacity, the list of parts that we have in the kind of round table discussions about like, hey, we could make this. I just like, this is why we don't have an HR department, because this is like the conversation itself is like a lawsuit waiting to happen. But yeah, so
it's funny. That's actually what I wanted to talk about next is the injection stuff, because obviously big jump, and I feel like from here on out it's going to be a lot of random questions. But
go ahead. No, now you've asked me like two questions and I've talked for like 30 minutes. So if you
it's been great.
Break
been
in
great.
With questions, and if you need to steer me a little bit.
It's not even much of a comment, but I mean, it's more of a comment than a question. But I remember when you started off with the injection stuff, and I was very excited for it. And now it's really a staple of like all your new figures, and it's opened the door to so many things. So it's really a great new direction that's going to give, I feel like it extended like longevity of what you could be creating.
Well, it's funny, right? This is where, you know, maybe like one business class might have helped me. I could probably, but it seems obvious now in retrospect, like, yeah, you got to diversify your business a little bit. You know, I mean, with the amount of custom Lego companies or blah, 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 bricks.com, or, you know, there's a lot more of them than there was a decade ago, which on the one hand, great. You know, there's like, I love the variety of things. I love when I see stuff that like, oh man, I wish I had come up with that I definitely could not have come up with that. You know, I like being surprised by that stuff. But, you know, we're all kind of drinking out of the same watering hole. And there have been times when parts to become scarce and become more expensive, and, you know, little tremors like when Bricklink gets absorbed into Lego, and, you know, just stuff that, like, running a business like this, you kind of feel the bumps in the road a lot. So at a certain point we said, yeah, you know, maybe we want to try and make some other stuff other than just printed parts, or minifigures or whatever. And the molding stuff, you know, all props in the world have to go to Will at Brick Arms. I will say under oath that Will was really the reason that I got into this. I think I saw an article in the, I saw the infamous article in the Daily Mail about, you know,
yeah, the Taliban figure.
Yeah, yeah, where they're like, this is outrageous. They're making a Lego Al-Qaeda. And I remember after I finished laughing at it, I remember thinking, oh, man, that's just super brilliant. And I'm not, and I knew, like, I don't know how to do what that guy's doing, but I do know how to print stuff. So maybe I can, that was kind of like the real genesis of, you know, I can't do that, but I can do this. So let me see if I can do my thing with the same kind of medium of Lego. I just thought it was kind of amazing to see somebody do something so non-Lego, you know? Right. So over the years of kind of developing a friendship with Will, you know, because I'm a huge fan, like I'm still very starstruck by the stuff he does, like as everybody is. But he was very kind enough to kind of, you know, say, like, point me in the right direction. You know, he's understandably very protective of the work that he's done, as I would be too. You know, like, I did all this research myself. Like, I don't want to tell you. People email me all the time, go like, how do you do this? What kind of ink do you use? What kind of machine do you use?
Right.
It's like, you know, man, like, I'd like to be more benevolent, but, like, I got to kind of protect a little bit of my interests here, you know? So I was always very cautious about asking Will any question that would be, he would find inappropriate, you know, but I think in that kind of deference, he gave me some very invaluable direction. And, you know, we'll never be in that same kind of league. And I'm not a gun guy, and I'm not really, you know, Will's like kind of a one in a million kind of scenario. But when we make figures, a lot of times when we decide what custom figure to make, we go, oh man, that part doesn't exist. Or I wish we had a hair that looked like this, or I wish we had an accessory that looked like this to really kind of sell it. There's nothing that makes me happier than when I make something and people immediately recognize it, which seems like a low bar to jump over. But conversely, there's nothing that would hurt my feelings more than if I made something and go, oh man, I just don't even know what that, what are you trying to do there? Like, I don't know who that is. That means I've done it badly. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if the task at hand is like, how do we, if you can't make this guy without this hair, what do we do? Do we either just shelve the idea, or do we find a way to make the hair, for example, or the accessory or the clothes or the skirt or whatever? And that kind of led to the necessity of, well, we better figure out how to mold them, you know? And then with some very kind of guiding principles that we kind of picked up from Will, like, all right, they got to be good quality. They got to be Lego-like. They got to be, you know, Lego makes them injection molded, we'll make them injection molded. So, I think a lot of times we take the long way around, and injection molding and 3D drafting stuff is really incredibly hard. And I don't know anything about it. And I feel like I did, you know, 12 years ago when I was trying to figure out how to pad print stuff. I like the kind of technical challenge of it. I like feeling like a novice at something and trying to, how do I get myself from novice to expert? So I'm in that now, like trying to figure out molding stuff and how to melt plastic into things I want it to be, is exciting and terrifying because I'm not very great at it. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's an exciting little chapter of the business. I think the stuff we made so far is pretty, you know, kind of hits the mark, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of, some of my favorite products, like, I think the way you've done the hairs is really creative. just to have it clipped on. Some people don't like it that it's sort of permanently adhered to the heads. But I think it's a creative solution because there's such a lack of items that'll fit like under the hat and stuff like that.
Sure. But yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's funny. Like the feedback we get, you know, it would be if people were just always like, oh, man, I think everything you make is amazing. It starts to ring kind of hollow. Like I won't lie. It stings when you read a somebody's post or see somebody's YouTube review of like, yeah, this sucks. Citizen Brick really dropped the ball on this one. it's like, dude, I spent the last 8 weeks of my life trying to make this for you. But you know, I'm not immune to criticism. I get it. I just hope people know, like, I did my best. I gave it my best. We'll never be, you can never accuse us of underthinking it because it's become like a single focus of my adult life is to try to make these things as good as I can. But, you know, sometimes there's a technical challenge. Over the years, and you've been, you know, you've been around. I remember you for a decade or more, you know.
Yeah, a little pipsqueak around.
Yeah, the parts. So, I mean, there's processes that we've tweaked over the years that are, you know, better than others. Like we switched inks about 5 or 6 years ago because the other one that we were using, while it was like good, wasn't great and didn't have the durability we wanted to. So
it didn't help at all. Whoa. Yeah. Now this is interesting.
Okay.
So you're saying the older ink wasn't as durable as you'd liked it to be? Because a lot of people cite like older parts as being so durable and that new Citizen Brick always scratches. This is like a common, there's like sort of two different parts of the community when I think about it.
I think,
and the military. And a common criticism from military is that, oh man, this old CB that I have, I've had it thrown in a bin in my Stanley case for conventions for 5 years and there's not a single scratch on it, but I just bought this one and it arrived scratched. And that's such a common thing.
Well,
so it's
right.
Silly to me to see that it's the opposite in a way.
Let me just address a customer service point real quick.
Put on
my boss hat real quick. If you get something that's scratched when you get it, that's a problem. and we will return that, no questions asked. That's a defect.
Yeah.
There was a window. If you look at the big timeline of stuff, there's actually been two ink changes. The one that we started with in the very, very inning, that stuff was bulletproof. And that's a lot of the stuff that you guys are talking about with in the Stanley cases. It was bulletproof. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, didn't have the same look. It was too heavy. You know what I mean? And then there was another stuff that we tried that was a more matte finish and printed a little easier and didn't have the same sort of chemical catalyst in it, but it wasn't sticking to the parts long term. It looked great. It looked great, amazing at the beginning, but then, you know, yeah, you get a couple dozen kids putting stuff in a Stanley case, which is effectively like a rock tumbler, and bouncing around a convention hall for 5 days. Yeah, you get chips on stuff. I don't think it was ever epidemic or a total failure, but it was something that needed to be addressed, and we did. And I think that if you look at anything we've made in the last couple of years, that issue has been kind of fixed, I think. Now, look, if you like, you know, you run over someone with your car, and you're gonna get the same thing, even with a Lego part. I think I've seen videos where kids will like take a Citizen Brick thing and hit it with 80 grit sandpaper and like scour it and be like, see, the printing comes off. I'm like, yeah, you know, your fingers would come off if you did that too. You know, it's like, that's not really a reasonable stress test. But the ink that we use now, I'm going to choose my words very carefully. The ink that we use and the printing process and post-process that we use are identical to what Lego does.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very confident that
in the quality.
I'm confident in, yeah, for sure. I stand by. And if as long as you're not, you know, beating it with a baseball bat, you know, we'll replace anything that's busted up for sure. Now, if you look at it, and this is kind of something I kind of learned over the years, that you know why Lego doesn't print on the very edge of the foot most of the time. You know, they don't do wraparound toes and boots, that kind of stuff.
Oh, because because it's so easy to scratch there. I never considered that.
Yeah, it's a high impact area. Like, people look at the Lego toes and like, why do they cheat those toe printing in from the very corners? Like, it never goes corner to corner. It's because it's like a high stress area, right? It's the first area to scratch off. And for aesthetic reasons, I wanted a boot that kind of like wrapped all the way around it. So we'd try to like overlap the printing like an envelope, where like it'll print, it'll creep over there. If you're printing the side, it'll creep over the toe. And then when you're printing the toe, it'll creep over back onto the side so that that corner has like two hits of ink effectively.
Mm-hmm. Like a little extra protection.
Yeah, but it's still like, it's a high stress area. So I guess in my perfect universe, guys are like taking them out of the package, holding them up to the light, oohs and ahs about how amazing it is, and then very carefully putting it on a shelf and then glancing at it, not directly, from time to time. You know, like, we try to make these things as playable as they can be, for sure. But, yeah, I mean, like, there's a way to abuse anything until it's... when I look at the toys I had when I was a kid, like, all the ink is rubbing off of everything. So it's like...
Yeah, certainly.
It's... I think it's as... It's, I think it, our stuff is as indelible as Lego is. But that being said, nothing's indestructible, you know?
Yeah.
Did I answer that?
It sounded... Yeah, no, it's a very politician answer. Like, it was kind of back around. No.
Because nothing would make me feel worse if people felt like they were getting robbed somehow. But I don't know what people are doing with their stuff.
I don't think the sentiment is really that deep.
And part of me wants to be like, hey, look, if you got issues, because this is the thrust of the business, right? Like, we got to get your mail out on time. That's important. You can't have some kid order with his, you know, I always imagine it's somebody's like saved up lunch money and they send you, they send it to you to buy something. You can't slow play them and have it take weeks to mail. And then once they get it, it's got to be what they want. You know, we get mistakes in orders, I just give you the right thing, no questions asked. Now, does that mean people abuse it? Sure. I've had a kid go like, hey, you forgot to include my 14 German infantry torsos. I was like, did I? Or are you trying to get free stuff, man? You know, but that's rare, you know. But just this morning, because a lot of the people who work for me don't know the difference between an MP40 and a car 98. You know, they don't, it's not reasonable to expect all adults to know this stuff. So if we send the wrong thing, we just send you the right thing. You can keep the wrong thing with our apologies. That's kind of the company policy. So yes, what's that line from Star Wars? Like, a lot of good men died bringing us information. We've spent a lot of good men died to get us the right inks and the right printing processes. So I'm very confident that, you know, it's not an issue going forward, but
awesome. You know,
call me out, man. If there's a problem, you know, I'm happy to answer it. What I hate, as a personal matter, is like, if there's a problem with an order, I mean, we're a small mail order business, right? Direct to customer. I touch almost everything that I mail. If there's a problem, give me a chance to fix it. You know, it's getting blindsided by like some kid putting up a 4-part video essay of like, System Brick sucks and here's why. And in the next 4 hours, I'll tell you point by point why
they screwed me in my order. And then it's like, did you reach out to them? Because they could have just given you
No, I didn't want to do that. I hate when I hear about stuff from video blogs. You know, it's like, give me a chance to fix it, man. I don't think you can find any stories where I've done anybody wrong. You know, try to be a good citizen. But yes, totally. I mean, yeah, take it easy on your parts, man. Don't like take them out of Stanley cases once in a while. Let them breathe. But jeez. I get it. You know, like, it's always amazing to me when people take stuff, and especially you modding guys, like, that is closer to my heart than it is in my actual practice. Like, there's no part of my life where I'm sitting and modding stuff, but in a former life where my kind of like, when I was a kid, like Dungeons and Dragons miniatures, this is like pre I'm trying to describe what they are. Like little like pewter miniatures, like Ralpartha and Grenadier figures. Back in the 80s when Dungeons and Dragons was more of a thing, that was like my entire universe. Like my entire junior high was sitting with like a magnifying glass painting those things to the end of the earth. Like I was a big Dungeons and Dragons guy. So modding stuff is not foreign to me, although the Citizen Brick kind of mantra is to try and make stuff just like factory Lego. So the idea of kind of like sawing it apart and gluing it together is it's just not the angle we're coming from, but you know, I'm with you in spirit, I guess.
There's very few examples of custom brands that'll like hand modify things, but one thing I always appreciated is that you guys cut the Mr. T hair displayed some Lego modding, and I always liked that. I just wanted to let you know.
Well, you know, when there's a will, there's a way, right? And next thing you know, they make a pretty appropriate
So was it actually for the Mr. T from like Lego Dimensions? I don't recall, but
I think
maybe they made
it
for something previously.
That was the first time ever we kind of got an idea out to market before, and then it showed up in real life Lego form. That was amazing.
That's
always been kind of like a topic that we joke about in the shop, is kind of like, I think very early on it was told to me that Lego was aware of Citizen Brick the same way that, like, you know, your health teacher is aware of syphilis. You know, it's like it's a good thing. It's not like, it's not necessarily a good thing, but we're aware of it, kind of thing.
Quite the analogy.
I guess that's how I don't think they like it, but I think they're aware of it. You know, in my most generous moments of self-reflection, yesterday, Ashley, who I mentioned before, who was with me at the very gritty beginning, sent me the thing going around the internet of the new creator set with the tiger.
Yes. I didn't know it was real. I thought it was a meme. I thought it was strictly a meme.
So for your listeners who don't know, this tiger has a butthole now.
Yeah.
The real...
It'll be in the wrap up. I post a wrap up on Instagram for people to see images related to the episode. It'll be there.
And I sent.
And they didn't even use the 1x1 round. It's like flower round.
Oh yeah,
it's so good.
It's it's got some balloon knot quality to it.
It's so precise.
And I said to Ashley in like a moment of real seriousness, I was like, I honestly believe that without the work that you and I had done over the last decade, this wouldn't be possible. It's like we've changed the world. And I challenged Lego to tell me I'm wrong, but I'm confident that that butthole has Citizen Brick's name all over it.
That's so funny. Jeez. All right. New tangent. I think you've expressed a couple times your feelings on this, but let's talk about reselling and eBay culture and stuff
that.
I know you've made you've taken some measures, especially over the past like year or two, to prevent scalping. And like, there's the only one item per order. You've increased like the quantities of stuff like so much more. I think the measures you've taken have fixed it quite a bit, but it's still prevalent. And I'd just love to know your thoughts.
I got a couple thoughts about it. Like, the kind of free market capitalist in me goes, hey man, you bought it from me from $1. I can't stop you from selling it for $2. If you turn around and sell it for $100, that feels more egregious to me. But look, it's not mine anymore. I can't do anything about it. To me, I consider it to be, I'm flattered that there's such a demand for this stuff. And I hate that people, like, I figure if you can't get it from me directly initially, that's mostly my fault. You know what I mean? So we've tried to address that mostly by just increasing the production here. You know, I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, we made a thing. It was a pig, and we printed kind of the dotted lines, like the butcher lines on it.
The butchered one, yeah.
Yeah, and we made 50 of them. And and honestly, we made 50 because I thought it was a dumb idea. I thought it was like, this is stupid and no one's going to buy this. And I'm kind of like paralyzed by that thinking sometimes. And I just said, well, just make 50 of them and that's cool. And the printmaker in me goes, well, if you're going to say it's 50 limited edition, then you can't do anymore. So we made 50 and I kind of painted myself in that corner and they sold out instantly. And I probably could have made 1,000 and they would have sold out instantly, you know. it was just an idea that I underestimated. And now those things live on eBay for like hundreds of dollars, which is,
yeah,
I created that problem. I don't blame anybody who's got one who wants to turn a buck on it. It's a weird hobby to me, I think, to, you know, to be a Lego speculator, but I wouldn't come out and say like, no, I can't be the pace car for that stuff. It doesn't make any sense. But yeah, I think if someone gets onto the website the second that it's for sale and buys 50 of them, I got a question like, hey man, come on, like, you know, you got to share a little bit. So that's when we started doing like one per person or one per order, just trying to make it last a little bit longer. And I'm happy to say with Black Friday, I think we finally beat the rush and had more, at least the initial wave of people. You know, it didn't sell out instantly, which is comforting a little bit.
Yeah.
There was some other point that I wanted to address. Like, oh, I don't go on eBay. I don't want to know. People, like, it's actually kind of a nightmare to me. When I was a kid, there was like a Cabbage Patch Kid craze, and then there was Beanie Baby craze, and there used to be Cabbage Patch Kid conventions and Beanie Baby conventions, and then one day there weren't, when everybody kind of sobered up and go, hey, this Beanie Baby is now worth $800. So I don't want to be part of the thing that makes people sober up about custom Lego and go, this is outrageous. I think our stuff is pretty fairly priced. I think it's cheaper than a lot of custom guys, and we can afford to do it cheaper because we do it in volume, do bigger volume of stuff. So I'm trying to do everything I can to make it accessible. Like, I mean, I don't make stuff for collectors who are rich, although I love rich collectors, to be sure. But if you're a kid and you want to buy something and you can get to the website the day it's released and you buy it for 15 or 20 or 25 bucks, I don't care if you turn around and sell it for 75. That's, you know, I'm just going to try and make it so that you don't have to buy it for 75 bucks. That's all I can do. But, you know, that's it. Some people's hobby is reselling Lego, I guess. You know, did I answer that?
Yeah, no, they,
no one's ever asked me my thoughts on it. Like, the people I surround myself at work and my wife, they don't give a shit about this stuff. So I have to save up all my thoughts for like another Lego sympathetic
person, a convention.
Like, yeah, someone to ask me a question I want to answer, you know.
It was touched on just a little bit there, but because of the limited quantity of the pigs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
When do you decide, well, what sort of has to be in place for you to decide to reprint something?
Well, I kind of always reserve the right to reprint anything except things that I've already said, this is a limited numbered edition. Like, that's a line we won't go back and redo. Some things I just kind of feel it out. If it sells out at the peak demand and I realize they're like, oh man, we just didn't make enough of them, then we might remake them. But a lot of times, this is just the simple economics of it, is it costs too much money to go back and reprint it. And I'll lose money if I keep going and making it. So I think the philosophy is just try and make as many as we need in one shot. And a lot of it is parts driven. Like, there's sometimes we'll use a hair or a color part and we can only get 600 of them. We would have preferred to make 700, but we can only get 600. And then later on down the road, like, oh, that hair that I was paying 35 cents a piece for is now 10 cents a piece. And we can get another 500 of them. Sometimes we'll do, you know, a lot of it goes into it. Like, is it easy to reprint? Will I make money if I reprint it? You know, right. A lot of it is a legal issue. A lot of it is like, hey man, you know, we always say like, we like to rob credit unions instead of federal banks. You know, like, I like to, I'm not going to linger around and go back and do that over again, you know? So when it's gone, it's gone. So
it's funny. Speaking of legal issues.
Oh, okay.
Just while we're on the topic, how much of a consideration is that before you go into designing something? And additionally, when you get a cease and desist, you've gotten a few in the past. You don't have to go through them all or anything like that. Is there something charming about it at this point, having so many under your belt? Because I feel like there must be.
I like, now I feel like, you know, all these legal teams are going to be listening to this. We have had some misunderstandings with certain corporate entities who have felt some of our products have borne a striking resemblance to some of their intellectual property.
Of course.
And we've always successfully come to some sort of resolution with those aggrieved parties and promise we'll never do it again. And then we don't. You know, if I step on a landmine, I'm not going to go same line, you know, minefield again.
Yeah.
It's funny, though, because I think we kind of came out of the gate a little more high profile than some other places. And I look around at like everybody who's just like, hey, man, isn't Disney paying attention at all to what anybody else is doing? You know, I asked Lego day one, back when I thought like maybe I could do this for a living. I went to a representative from Lego who I had access to. And I said, what do you not want me to do? Because we were discussing how convincing our stuff looked.
Right.
Compared to regular Lego. And, well, I would never dare to dream they consider that to be any kind of real threat to them. They did recognize that our stuff was uncannily similar to theirs. And that makes sense. The process is the same. The aesthetic and the line work and the drawing style were deliberately mirrored that of Lego. That was the philosophy. So when, you know, I'm looking at a guy who works for the company and he's holding a little leather daddy that I made and considering the possibilities of it. And I said, what do you not want me to do? And he just said, don't make any Star Wars, don't make any Marvel, don't make anything that we got our claws in, you know? And I see that seemed like a perfectly reasonable request to me. No disrespect to anybody who does those things. It's not my cup of tea because I personally am interested in making the things that Lego just never make, you know?
Right.
I'm an older guy. I grew up with all that stuff. I saw every Star Wars movie in the theater from 1977 onward. So I love that stuff as much as anybody. But it already exists. And the Marvel stuff even more. Like, I'm not going to draw it better than Stan Lee drew it or whoever. You know, Jack Kirby drew it. So I don't try. So we don't do Spider-Man. We don't do... It's not just for the legal stuff. It just doesn't float my boat as much. You know, obviously there's real interest in it because there's a kajillion custom Star Wars and custom Spider-Man or whatever.
Iterations on iterations of the same character.
I'm not that well versed in it. It's not my thing. So I'm really happy that there's less traffic in my lane. If I was starting a company today and say, I'm only going to make, you know, very specific Iron Man figures, it feels like it's very, you know, that pool's already pretty crowded to me, but whatever. But Lego told me early on that they'll blow me up if we mess with that stuff. So we just don't, you know, we just don't. So there. Cool. Maybe I've left a lot of money on the table, but it's just not my racket. I'd rather do something weirder.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So is it charming though?
Oh, it's a good war story, right? Like, you know, you want to tell the stories where you didn't get blown up.
Sued?
You know, like it's not. No, it's actually it's a feeling of nausea that I don't like. Where you get a very serious and thick envelope from a legal firm, you know, yelling at you. But I got a very vicious lawyer who, you know, who waits for me to call him and then he yells at me. He says, why do you keep doing this? You know how not to do this, right? I was like, I can't help it. I keep doing it. And then he charges me $1 million to get out of trouble again. No, I don't take it. Like, I don't, I'll put it this way, Billy, I can't stop myself. Like the art student in me just wants to make what he wants to make. It's always not always a very prudent decision, but you know, everybody be cool, man. Stop tagging the real people in it. Can we talk about that for a second? Seriously. It's like the kid who's like, hey, I think you forgot to collect the homework, you know?
Oh,
it's
that's
like
that's
when
perfect.
I make a thing and then somebody tags, you know, at the like, real blah,
look,
blah, blah.
It's you.
Oh my God. What are you thinking, man? Just be cool, guy. You know, it's like, do they think that they're like, If it's people trying to get me in trouble, all right, fine. But if it's people just like, oh, we're just going to help them make a love connection, then we're all going to hang out together. It's like, you're not – stop, dude. Just be cool, everybody. Give me a chance, you know? thankfully our stuff only sells for a couple of days and then it's like not an issue anymore. So when you get a cease and desist and be like,
we already stopped, there's no more.
No, just like we're not selling this. That's honestly true. I'm not selling this thing. So
cool.
That's all they want, really. Stop tagging the real people, man. Stop. Cool, everybody.
is there any item that you've regretted making?
I'm turning my attention to the kind of the archive on the wall so I can see if any of it kind of stings. Mm-hmm. I regret that we spent a lot of the last couple of years doing a lot of corporate stuff for a lot of corporations. We did that kind of as a side hustle for a while because Google and Sony and all these companies pay a lot of money to do these little tchotchkes that get kind of given away at conventions or whatever. So it was cool. Like, it was fun to do some of those things, but they take a lot of energy and a lot of parts. And we were only really taking them to pay for a pretty hefty payroll. And now we don't have that same payroll because after the pandemic, we kind of have a smaller footprint. So I don't need to take that work on anymore. So I regret it only because it kept me from doing projects I'm more interested in. But as far as Citizen Brick stuff, no, I don't think so. What do you think? Do you think we made anything that was regrettable?
No, I was just curious.
No, yeah, nothing keeps me
up. That question was from Parker. So
I regret doing stuff for Parker, for sure. No.
That's understandable. Who would want a torso with an arm flexing on it? This is ridiculous.
No, I wish that brings up an interesting point, because for a while we were able to do a lot more custom printing, especially for people who, wanted this, like Parker, who wanted to make something for him. And I think for a little minute it became like, I got Citizen Brick to make this for us. And then when I suddenly couldn't do it for everybody, I didn't want to leave anybody out, but we just kind of had to stop, except for things that were already kind of in the works. Stop doing those kind of custom things. It's just, we don't have the capacity. We don't have the manpower to do it all the time. So that's why. It's not because I don't like doing it. We've also done a lot of that stuff and it kind of spawned, people. It's kind of a catch-22 where, like, to get us to be able to print something for you, you got to make X amount of them. And in order to afford making X amount of them, you're probably going to need to sell off the ones that you do make. And next thing you know, we've kind of accidentally put people into a business maybe they didn't plan on getting into. And like, right, we made 500 of something for somebody and they're like, okay, well now I got to sell 500 of these things. And it became this kind of like, I think we accidentally made some competition for ourselves or something, but it was, it's part of the fact that like our prices are expensive because our process is expensive, So I can't do short runs of that stuff for everybody anymore. I just don't have the space to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm flattered I'm flattered. I like anytime people want to collaborate, it's always exciting to me, but it's just from a practical standpoint, not always possible.
Yeah. Now I could totally see in hindsight when you started, slowing back on commissions or stopping them entirely, there's a much, much more products coming out on a consistent basis. So
I've got a backlog of stuff that there's stuff that I'm not a brilliant man, but I'm prolific in that I've got a lot of ideas I want to do. I've got a list that I carry around with me of like, oh shit, we should do that. And then I write it down. And that list is much longer than I can practically produce.
Yeah.
And then if I stall on something for too long, next thing you know, I've seen somebody else has come up with it too. And they go, oh, well, if we do it now, they're just going to think that like we're just copying what else is out there. That's a whole other topic. And I don't like being, our process is slower. It's a more mechanical kind of analog printing process. And if I could like draw it in the morning and print it on my UV printer at night and have it on the website the next morning, a person who will do that might claim ownership. They're like, I came up with it first. I'm not interested in who came up with it first. You may make it first, but Citizen Brick will make it last because we're going to make it the best. is kind of my philosophy about it. So I don't really get into that kind of, oh, so-and-so's copying you, or so-and-so did this first and now you're doing, I can't fight with kids on the internet anymore. It's a bad look, you know, it's legally fraught, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. But people all the time send me screenshots of something that looks uncannily like something I drew. And, you know, that's for those other people that kind of have to live with themselves. I don't steal stuff. I don't need to. I just draw something else, you know. Yeah. It's a bummer, though. You know, I the first time we got bootlegged in you know, an overseas factory was kind of exciting. I was like, oh, look, they're making.
We made it.
We made it. This is showing up in Hong Kong, and it's, we made it, you know, but it becomes a real headache. It's a small community with a finite amount of customers, and I don't want people buying knockoffs, you know, if they don't have to.
Totally.
Know? So.
So wrapping up here a bit, before we go into design or resign, I'll eliminate one of the items from it. You may recall, yours truly created a change.org campaign to create the Always Sunny in Philadelphia 5-pack. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Listen, we got a lot of signs.
How many? How many for real, though?
I don't recall. I think it's like 160 or so.
Okay. But I need like 600 to make it viable.
No, come on. You could put it on the website. It'll sell out instantly.
No, I need like each of you to buy four of them. How about that? It's just a math problem at that point.
You're really killing my dreams here, okay? I can't get everyone who'd be interested to sign a change.org. It's difficult. I'm not a politician here. It's
funny, right?
Task.
Like, I get a lot of people like, oh, you should totally do this. You know, you should totally do Charlie Chaplin. I'm like, okay, but. You know, I don't know a lot of kids who are into Charlie Chaplin. Like, there's a pragmatic kind of, can I sell enough of these to make my money back?
Right.
Do you know the slowest selling Citizen Brick product ever is the Space Apes one, Safe Space.
Yeah.
That's the slowest selling one we've ever had. It's been on the shelf for years.
That's understandable. Yeah.
No, it's not. Not to me. I think it's my finest work ever. Based on my favorite intellectual property ever. And if I had my way and I didn't have payroll to concern myself with, I would only make those things because it's my favorite. So even my ideas are not terribly popular ideas sometimes. Most of the people that work with me are like a decade younger than me. And they go, when I go, okay, guys, here's the list of like 90s movies we're going to be focusing on. They'll go like, hey, we were in elementary school, man. This means nothing.
They help keep you in check.
Well, you know, you're not going to see us do like, you know, we're not going to be doing any TikTok stars anytime soon. It's just not my bag, you know?
Right.
But that's the challenge, right? Like I love when people go, oh, I know what that is when they see it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would only do Space Apes if I had my way. So it comes down to like, I too would also love to do that thing that you did change.org for, but I don't know if there's enough of us who agree to make it worth it.
Maybe I think you underestimate how many people will buy it just because it's called Citizen Brick, but I digress. That's
maybe fine. there's a sweet spot where I get a little bit of leniency because people just want to own one of everything, which I think is the momentum that I love the best. You know, I don't know what it is, but I bought it. Like, thanks, man. I appreciate the confidence.
I'm guilty of that.
All right. So what's your next design or resign?
Yeah. Well, that was the
Let's call that
one.
Idea like that one is like a strong maybe.
Strong maybe. I like it.
Maybe.
So now officially going into design or resign.
Okay.
We have first up, most of these were suggestions. A Matrix 3-pack with Trinity, Morpheus, and Neo. Or just a single character from that mix.
I call that the Keanu conundrum, is that Keanu Reeves looks like Keanu Reeves in almost everything, right? Like, there's a reason we didn't do a Mad Men set, as much as I love that show.
Okay, yeah.
Because they all just look like dudes in suits, you know? And then it's like, oh, I don't, who is that? And that's the question I don't want to get. So I would say that the Matrix is almost too easy. And, you know, there's some same thing with John Wick, you know, like I saw that for the first time. I was like, oh, maybe I could draw that. Like, it's just a dude in the suit, you know?
Right.
It's been done pretty thoroughly already. So I'm going to say that's a, what's the question? Resign. I'm going to resign.
Resign,
on that.
Sure.
Thank Pass you. On that. Yeah.
Next up, Django from Django Unchained.
Oh, no. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I didn't like that movie. That movie made me really uncomfortable.
It is an uncomfortable movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's understandable. I can see you not wanting
That's
to.
All. It's just a it's just a bummer. Mm-hmm. Not for any other reason other than that. It's just like, yeah, it does not spark joy for me.
You don't want to put that emotion out there through your your works. That's understandable.
I don't want to challenge my our collective past that directly.
Understandable.
Costumes are cool though. I couldn't get down with that movie. It was hard to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I only just watched it recently, and although it was enjoyable, it's difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
Alrighty. Last item here. Gonna lighten the mood here, in a way. also might be an HR violation.
Oh God. Okay.
What's your thoughts on? Okay, you've been known to push the boundaries on the sensuality of Lego.
That's gonna be the name of my solo album. Joe Truby, the sensuality of Lego. Okay, I'm listening.
Hear this.
Okay.
Injection molded. Injection molded adult toys.
Whoa.
I'm sure it's been a conversation before.
Yeah, I mean, it has. But no, dude, I'm not going to tell you no. Because I don't want to go to a prison in Denmark because there's some obscure obscenity rule that I'd be breaking by sending it overseas. Next thing you know, I'm grabbed at an airport. No, man, that's a trap. Forget that. I think you can look at the Citizen Brick record and know that some of the stuff is very tongue-in-cheek, but none of it is – like we don't do – somebody was asking me at a convention, like, oh, why don't you do like a heroin enthusiast or do prostitutes or something? Like,
gosh.
I'm not like, I don't want to do like human misery. You know what I mean? Like, it's more fun to not be that over the top. I'm not a prudish guy by any stretch, but, the cleverness to me is being a little more suggestive in it rather than
than on the nose.
Yeah, dude. Like, why don't you make a homeless guy? You can call him like an outdoors enthusiast. It's like, because homeless people, dude, that's not, you know, that's why, because that's super messed up, man. You know, hopefully there's like a line that we can kind of straddle where it's funny and pleasant, but not, it would just be mixing up too many of my interests, really. It would just be a conflict of interest for me to make. That's always that'd be a fallback plan. Like if Lego blows us up, then we'll just go into the sex toy business full-time.
I feel like I've heard you mention that before.
As a threat. I'll show all of you. That's what we'll do instead.
Right. I remember I can't remember when you might have said it. I think it could have been that live stream for Brick World Chicago.
Yeah.
But you're like, if anything was to happen and it's like I have a year left. You're like, you'll know the business is failing or we only have a year left if I start making insane products.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I told my wife the other day, like, I'm just going to, like, what are you going to do if you're not doing that? I told my financial advisor this too. He's like, all right, so what's your plan if you're not making Lego for a living? I go, I'd just be an ice cream man. Like, I just buy an ice cream truck and drive around and give people ice cream. And everyone looked at me like I'm kidding. I was like, no, that'd be totally fun. Why would that not be a dream job for me, you know? Have you had ice cream? It's amazing, you know? Why would you not want to share that with people? So I'm okay. Like, we'll be all right. I try very hard to not, like, steer the ship into the rocks because I got people on payroll, you know? And as much as I think Lego sex toys would be a blast to make, it's a quick trip to, like, unemployment line to me.
Yeah.
Now, someone out there is hearing and be like, aha, that's he won't take it. I will. But everybody just be cool.
More power
right?
to them.
Like, we don't need to anger the folks at Lego. We don't give them a reason to. It's like I never saw it myself, but I heard some people made a Lego Hitler. It's like, come on, dude. Like, do you know the history of Denmark? Like, do you think it's going to rile them to anger at it? Like, don't ruin this for everybody else, morons, you know, but historical accuracy. You know?
Right. I'm not sure how you talking about the ice cream, being an ice cream man, reminded me of this. But quickly before we close out here, will we ever get a Joe Sigfig for Stud Club reward?
Damn it. Yes. Yes. I don't want to do it because I'm really cringing at the idea of what people are going to do with it. And this refers back to your other question. They're going to take pictures of me in compromising situations. But I said I would, so I will. Yeah, it's probably in the near future.
So that'll be the final bang for Stud Club. When is that supposed to finally kick off?
Okay, so I think I explained this on some other media form, or maybe just in person. Stud Club is phasing out because it's very tough to manage. The software of it is really kind of clunky, and it doesn't really do what I want it to do. And we've been using it in kind of bastardized way for a long time. And it's just expensive to run, and I can't come up with any more tchotchkes to make that aren't dumb. Like, I don't want to make, you know,
Citizen Brick bubblegum.
Well, if it's cool, if it's funny, I mean, it's more just like, I don't want to make any more stainless steel coffee mugs. You know, it's like,
yeah.
You don't want any junk with my name on it just for the hell of it. Right. Like, we wanted to do whoopee cushions. That's funny. You know,
that is really funny. That is funny though.
I just don't want it to be boring. Like keychains. What the hell are you going to do with a Citizen Brick keychain? Remind yourself as you start your car in the morning that, like, oh yeah, I should shop at Citizen Brick. Like, it just has run its course as far as being funny and interesting things to do. So yes, we will. You can use up all your points by buying a Joe Sigfig and doing inhumane things to it, I guess, but be gentle. Okay. Try to be nice to you. Try to be nice to me.
Phil Thugs is going to have fun with that.
See, no, that's what I'm talking about. Take it easy, guys, okay? You're going to ruin it for the rest of us.
I'm glad their presence is known to you. This is great.
Yeah.
All right.
Children's toys, everybody.
With that, thank you so much for your time, Joe. Do you got any closing thoughts?
Thank you, guys. I don't, because I'm very, very bad at business communication sometimes. I'm a bad typist, and it takes me forever to get back to people. I would like to apologize to anybody I've inadvertently under communicated with or suddenly stopped communicating with. Like, a lot of times guys will email me and then we'll go back and forth for a minute and then I'll just like wander away and never respond again. I'm sorry. There's only four of us here and I answer all the email myself and it's really time consuming. So I love all of you. Thank you for keeping me from having to get a real job. I will try to do right by everybody, but please be patient with my slow replies to stuff. And thank you very much for allowing me to do this. This is what I do for a living now. I said it to my family at Thanksgiving. It used to be the joke of like, what are you going to get a real job? And it's like, I'm too old for a real job. This is what my obituary is going to say that I did. It's like, I spent over a decade making custom Lego, trying to put nipples on children's toys. That's my legacy. So thank you to everybody who's kept it going. I will try to keep up the good work, I guess.
Quite the legacy it is.
First line of my obituary. All right. Happy to do this. Anytime you want more rambling nonsense, I'm happy to do it.
Absolutely. I have plenty more things we could have touched on, so I look forward to another episode in the future.
Cool, yeah. I'll be happy to do it again another time.
What a pod. Thank you so much again, Joe, for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it, and it was such a pleasure getting to talk to you for an extended period of time. Things are always so rushed at cons, so it was really nice to sit down and pick your brain on things. If you enjoyed this podcast, leave a review on iTunes, and I believe on Spotify now, too. So, hey, if you're about that, if you're on Spotify, like, I know the stats, like most people are. If you're not on Spotify, kind of whack, low-key, it's okay. I love you anyways. Make sure to leave a review, like, or follow on your platform that you're listening. Share it with a friend, repost it on your Instagram story. All that support really goes a long way. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you'll come back in 2 weeks from now, bi-weekly, whatever. However, I'll upload when I wanna, okay? We have Itlug coming on the podcast. It's going to be a doozy.
Yeah, see you soon.